Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I'm so excited we're finally doing this.
Right? Take two.
Right? Yeah, exactly. We're not going to talk about those. That was just like a practice round. Yeah. But yes, here we are on our first
Okay.
episode, and we're making it work. I guess
Okay.
we should like introduce ourselves and tell people who we are and all that good stuff.
Probably might be a good idea to start there.
All right.
So who are you?
I am Sarah, and you are?
Sarah, what a coincidence.
Oh my gosh, perfect. So easy to remember. And we are giant fans of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all that is the Buffyverse. So here we've decided to come together and talk about, because our other passion in life is, of course, history. We're both history teachers. And so we're going to talk about Buffy and badass women in history and why Buffy is such a wonderful zeitgeist of feminism and awesomeness and how it totally shaped my life. I imagine it shaped your life too.
Indeed. So welcome to She Saved the World a Lot.
Yay, because she
All
does.
right. Again and again.
So much. So yeah, we also last week or when we were talking about this, you also brought up Joss Whedon as and his role in feminist TV culture and all that good stuff. And I actually looked up because you'd said something like, oh, he's actually a fake feminist. And I kind of heard some like weird things, but I wasn't totally on the up and up, and so I looked it up and I was thinking about like how it's possible that Joss Whedon maybe was not the feminist we always thought that he was, but still created this amazing feminist TV show.
That's right, because while he was the creator and driving force behind OG Buffy the movie, which is amazing, and Buffy the TV show, there were tons of writers on this show and people who were the driving force behind it. And they're the people who really made Buffy what it was,
Absolutely.
not
Absolutely.
just him.
Not just Joss, although
That's
he
right.
did have the original premise of Buffy, which is always one of my favorite things, right? Forever and ever, was and it's a good premise, right? The idea of the monster movie, horror movie trope of the little blonde girl who walks down a dark alley and everyone in the audience goes, "She's about to die." And instead, when the monster pops out, turns out she's the killer and she hunts the monsters. So that's the original premise of the movie, starring our the most glorious heartthrob. I'm starring Christy Swanson, of course, but like she's a Trump supporter now, so I kind of
That's not the
like, yep,
important part.
she's not important. The important part of the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie is, of course, 90s heartthrob and forever in our
Pee Wee Herman.
hearts, not Pee Wee
No?
Herman. That was your 90s heartthrob, girl.
Dang it.
No, the just eternal and beautiful and wonderful Luke Perry, aka Dylan McKay on 90210, and Pike in Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
That's
Oh,
right.
may he rest in
Also home
peace.
of Derpy David Arquette
Oh
and Hilary
yes.
Swank's minor cameo, Ben Affleck's
Oscar,
non-role.
yeah, Oscar winner Hilary Swank and Oscar winner Ben Affleck also have minor roles in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the original film.
That's right. And if you have not seen the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer, stop what you're doing and go
Sure.
watch it because it is amazing in a completely different cheese way than Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show.
Yes, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show, is like the graduation of the film.
Yes, well, it's what we got as a result of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie not being what Joss Whedon wanted to be.
Right.
So because it was a camp fest and strayed from the original plans, we did end up getting, many, many seasons of the awesomeness that was Buffy the TV show. But the movie does. That's right. But the movie does give us amazing things like floating vampires, which are abandoned on the TV show. And I'm kind of sad about that because nothing says, like David Arquette floating up to your window to be like, hey, buddy, let me in.
Yes, and the vampires in the original one did fly, but they do not.
That's right.
In the TV show.
And it, and we lost the whole idea that the way you identified as the Slayer was that you had an ugly mole. True. And Buffy, of course, being super shallow and from LA, got hers removed because, ew.
And because Los Angeles, if you don't know, because you've been living under a rock, is the plastic surgery capital of the world. So,
right. And it had amazing, amazing quotes like, you know, all I want to do is move to Europe, marry Christian Slater, and die.
And, every girl's 90s dream.
Right. And what does she criticize her teacher because he wore a brown tie?
Oh, right.
That's so many good.
They go really deep. In the film, they go really deep into the Valley Girl trope. Christy Swanson, Hilary Swank for sure. That's before, well, of course, before the next Karate Kid, Hilary Swank's acting chops were just amazing. She really threw herself into the role of Valley Girl. It was very like, oh my God, like gagame. It was, yeah, it was intense. There was some intense Valley Girl-ness.
Ugh. Right, yeah.
But the TV show.
So good.
Thank God. Thank God Joss finally got what he wanted, at least, and got a TV show out of it, because Buffy saved the world, our world, my world, for 7 seasons.
Right, and as a result, we went from Christy Swanson's super Valley Girl Buffy to Sarah Michelle Gellar's way less Valley Girl Buffy.
Yeah.
And a cast of other characters, some of whom are decidedly problematic, and we'll discuss that. And yeah, oh, some of whom you can tell that the writers, especially at the beginning, were not as adept at writing female characters in the way that they need to be written, but that's cool. They got there.
Buffy definitely evolved.
And we traded. Yes. Well, and Willow as well. And we traded Luke Perry and his massive Cro-Magnon forehead
hot
for David Boreanaz and his massive Cro-Magnon forehead. So we swapped Heartthrob A for, I guess, Heartthrob B.
Oh,
and lost such Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, we did lose Pee Wee Herman, and we lost. Well, Pee Wee Herman dies in the movie. It has a very long, long, long death, and
it is the best thing.
It is the longest death, and the illustrious also Oscar. Wait, did Donald Sutherland win an Oscar? Donald Sutherland's also in that movie.
I feel like he should.
Yeah, for Buffy, he's like a, you know, a very well-known actor, Donald Sutherland. So they got some big wigs in the original Buffy too.
Yeah, and like Rutger Hauer was the big bad.
And well, what's even better is now that when we get to talk about Buffy the TV show, we get to talk about all of the late 2000s, like 2000 to 2010 actors that started becoming like super famous were all had like tiny bit parts on Buffy season one and Buffy season two.
That's right.
Buffy starting launched off with the career of a lot of famous actors.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right. So do you want to take a break and we'll jump right in going back to 1997 when the very first episode of Buffy aired?
I think so. I think we should.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Take a break and I'll see you in a second.
All right. Bye.
All right. We travel back to March 1997 with episode one.
I am. I have watched these episodes so many times, honestly, but I did take some notes and so that I remember the important key parts. And I'm sure you will also help me. Because I'm a nerd, because I'm a history teacher, and we historians need to take notes. That's how it goes.
All right. So let's get started.
So we open with a darkened hallway, right? We're at Sunnydale High School, although we don't know what Sunnydale High School yet. And two teenagers are breaking into the school, presumably to make out and maybe cause a little trouble. We have our blonde, cute schoolgirl, who we come to find out is Darla, and the boy she's going to make out with. And, of course, Darla is very freaked out because they're not supposed to be in there. And the boy, who's kind of maybe a little rapey, is like, it's cool, it's cool. I'm so brave. We're going to make out. Da, 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 da. And so she gets all scared and is like, what was that? What was that noise? Oh, no. And he's like all, you know, Mr. Brave, cocky teenage boy, reassures her that no one is there. They are totally alone and completely safe to make out. And what happens? Bum, bum, bum. Darla whips around with vampire face and bites him. And that is our cold open for Buffy, episode one. Welcome to the Hellmouth.
That's right. And this part kind of kicks it off with a bang and with that whole, you know, the little innocent girl is actually your big bad. And also kind of introduces some, well, controversy. Lets us know right off the bat that we're going to have some issues with how we depict our female characters. Yeah, and gives us our very first blink and you'll miss him person who will become more famous later actor, and poor guy who just wants to get laid in the high school becomes vampire food. Who ends up starring for like 85 million seasons on CSI New York, which I watch because I'm secretly like 140 and only watch crime shows and the Golden Girls.
Wow.
And obviously Buffy.
Crime is awesome. I mean, crime shows are awesome. Sure. Crime is not awesome.
Yes, crime shows.
No. Crime shows.
Specify.
Actors playing characters on crime shows are awesome, not actual crime. Don't commit, go out and commit crimes just because I said that. But yeah, so we have our and our opening scene, our Nerf Herder theme song. And although in going back and watching these old episodes, I realized that the Buffy logo in the first season is different than the Buffy logo in later seasons and on all the like merch. The original Buffy logo in the first episode, it like Buffy's just, it's just like written in like pencil. It looks like the font. It was not good. The more gothic, you know, steak drippy Buffy font of later seasons
comes later.
The merch is much better. We were not, we fired our original graphic organizer after the first season.
Yeah.
And
this is also the era when our show intros were so long. That's what I always forget when I'm in between watchings. And then you go back and you're like, fucking Christ, like, how long is this intro?
Right? Remember because when television had intros? And so I guess do TV shows even still have those? I guess Law and Order.
I mean, I think they do, but a lot of times, like, thank God for Netflix and that skip intro button.
Oh,
because when you're binge watching stuff,
skip like, intro button.
I don't need to hear and like see, you know, people get blown up over their spell book like 85 million times in a row when I'm, you know, binge watching Buffy.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of my friends, in the first season, the intro has that scene with the tarantulas, and I definitely know people who, like, could not handle that at all and therefore had a small nervous breakdown every single time the intro came on. So thank God for the skip intro button. Thank you, Netflix.
Seriously.
Yeah. So, going on, we after the 9-hour long intro where we are introduced to all the actors on our show, we have Buffy in her bedroom, right? Buffy in bed. Another awesome opening, you know, Buffy in bed, but she's having a nightmare with all these creepy, dark scenes and candles and caves and rituals and blood. And also we are introduced to the Master, who is season one's, who ultimately becomes season one's big bad Apocalypse bringing vamp, who's permanently wrinkled forehead because he's so old.
And otherwise known as fruit punch mouth.
Fruit punch mouth.
My favorite insult.
Oh God, fruit punch mouth is so good. But yeah. And he definitely has the fruit punch mouth. So the wrinkly foreheads were a controversial thing. I remember when it came out, people were like, what the hell is this thing with the vampires and their wrinkly faces? Like, aren't vampires supposed to be sexy like Dracula?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the first time that we took our sexy vampires and then when they were ready to attack you, made them decidedly less sexy because no one looks good with that fake rubber forehead and weird little upper mouth wrinkles. Like, it's not.
And they're like weird pig nose thing. Yeah. It was definitely.
Yeah, it was not a good look.
Yeah, it was not a good
but,
look.
But yeah. Because, yeah, your vampires are supposed to look sexy. And I'm all for them not sparkling. 100% not Team Twilight. Yeah. But your vampires are supposed to...
is greater than...
They're supposed to brood. Yeah.
They are. Yeah, for sure. So Buffy's having weird dreams and she gets ready for school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she wakes up.
Yeah.
Right. And then we are... it opens on gorgeous Sunnydale High School, which is actually Torrance High School.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
Buffy's mom drops her off. We learn that Buffy, as parents used to
as
do.
You do.
Mm-hmm. I guess some parents still drop their kids off at high school. I don't remember that ever happening in LA, but when I was in high school, but we all carpooled or like had. Well, I guess. Anyway, not important. Buffy's mom drops her off in school and asks her to please not get kicked out again. So we learn that. Well, we knew if you've watched the original Buffy, like she burns down the school gym because it's full of vampires and she's, you know, a valley girl from LA. Buffy and her mom have had to relocate to Sunnydale, which is, I guess, Northern California, Central Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's Northern. So this is like pretty much the only, the only reference that we get to the fact that Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, ever exists is when Buffy and her mom are meeting with the principal and they talk about how she got kicked out of her old school for burning down the gym.
Yeah.
And because that's basically what happens at the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie.
Yeah.
And then the reference to her watcher that died. And that's the only callback of any kind to the fact that there was a pre-TV Buffy.
Right.
And in every other way, shape, or form, this Buffy is completely different in how she, you know, looks, acts, everything.
Yeah.
All of those things.
For sure. So, yeah, she, her mom's like, please don't get kicked out again, right? And we also are introduced to Xander and Willow. Who are soon to be Scooby Gang members are Willow, who might actually be my favorite character in all of Buffy. I'm not sure. It's hard, but Willow's definitely up there. She is
definitely has the best arc.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Xander, who I had a huge crush on in high school. He was totally my type in high school, that like nerdy sort of outcast best friend guy. But now that I have aged and grown wiser and noted and learned about problematic behavior in men, Xander Harris is kind of not cute anymore.
No, he's problematic and so many ways.
He's problematic as fuck. Uh-huh. Yes. Definitely, like, back in 97, we did not have the word incel, but... I feel like now we would categorize Xander as a little incel-y for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, even from like this first episode, starts to show that, you know, he demands attention and is like, why doesn't she just like want to like me and people should just want to date me? And yeah, he's got issues.
Yeah, he does.
Lots of issues.
And his quippy one-liners. A little bit.
He does. Yes.
It's not an excuse. It's never an excuse.
It is never an excuse. And his quippy one-liners, while amazing, do not excuse his shit-tastic behavior in so many ways.
Yeah.
And if I was going to vote a member of the Scooby Gang off the island, it would be fucking Xander.
Yeah.
As much as, you know,
I mean, it depends on what season.
I do love me some sarcasm and some quippy one-liners.
Xander does get better. He gets better in the later seasons, but not enough.
Yes. Yeah. He does learn.
He does learn.
But at a very slow pace.
I feel like Xander might actually be the reflection. Because I don't think Xander's evil. Like, I don't think he's, like, a bad person. But I think Xander's character, now that I read all the stuff about, like, the things the writer said about working with Joss Whedon, or, like, what Charisma Carpenter said about, you know, in later seasons on Angel and all that stuff, and what his ex-wife said, and, you know, I think Xander might actually be, like, the reflection of, like, Joss Whedon, right? The guy that just feels like he's not enough, he's insecure, girls don't like him, and so he becomes, like, a little bit, like, bitter and entitled, right? Like, I'm a white man in America. Why don't all girls like me? But, yeah, Xander's a little problematic. Still cute, but less cute. Like, Nicholas Brendan now is a little scary too, but he was definitely dreamy when I was in high school. I had a big old crush on Xander. Not as much as Angel.
In 1988, he was real cute.
Yeah. He was pretty adorbs. Yeah. He was that doofy. He was the doofy best friend guy that was just like hopelessly in love with his friend. Like back in the 90s, we called incels, oh, you're just like hopelessly in love with your best friend. You're in the friend zone. Poor guy. Now we're just like, nah, fuck you. Get over it. You're not entitled to any woman's body, no matter how nice she is to you.
Right. Don't like give her a bracelet without her knowing it and then expect that like she's now bonded to you. It's creepy and weird, dude.
Yeah, it's super creepy and weird.
But that's like four episodes.
But that's
enough
for the future. Anyway. Anyways. So we have our opening school scenes, and we've got Buffy in the principal's office, where the principal's like, oh, it's a clean slate, but oh, wait, also, sorry, you burned down the school gym. Okay, well, we accept you here, but try not to burn down anything.
We're watching you very carefully. Yeah.
And we get, you know, more of her background, and then Buffy runs smack into Xander on her way out of the principal's office.
Literally.
And all her bag falls over. Xander is, of course, smitten with how cute Buffy is. And in the world's shortest skirt all that season. Sarah Michelle Gellar wears the shortest skirts that have ever existed in time. But yeah.
Yeah.
And then we also meet Cordelia, who is seemingly nice at first. I actually have my character list. Here are my notes for my character list. Because I was like, okay, we got Buffy. She's the Slayer. Willow, she's nerdy and shy. Xander's the fucked up friend. Cordelia, popular bitch.
Well, Cordelia was Regina George before Regina George.
Exactly.
Like, she's the queen bitch bee. She has her little, like, plastic gang. Who have the most ridiculous fucking names because, you know, her, like, little minions are named Harmony and Aura.
Oh, yeah, Aura.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they test Buffy to see if she's cool enough to hang with them by asking her if Vamp is in or out. And,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
And for those of you that don't know, Vamp is that Chanel nail polish that was, like, so blue it's black. They cost like $28 a bottle back in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, so red, sorry. So red, it's black.
Yes.
There's also a blue version that was way cooler.
Vamp was just, you know, well, obviously, vampires, dark blah, whatever. But they got over it really quick. What else? Yeah, Cordelia does totally quiz Buffy on, like, her cool factor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Oh, the 90s. And then she's rude to Willow and asks Willow, what does she say? Nice dress. It's nice to see you've seen the softer side of Sears.
Oh! Yeah.
She's mean. So Buffy kind of figures out right away that Cordelia, while nice to her, is not actually nice. And
And of course, everybody's clothes clue you into this, because Cordelia wears a lot of, like, animal print, like, actual, like, snakeskin, like, like, mini skirts and, like, you know, like, leather skirts and, like, shit like that. So she's obviously, like, the mean one.
Cordelia and also Buffy's dresses like just... she's 30. Like, yeah. She dresses like
she dresses kind of like 90s. Like an office working dominatrix.
Yes, that is
in a lot of ways.
Vibe in a lot of ways.
And Buffy wears, like, you know, 500 spaghetti strap tops and, like you pointed out, the world's shortest skirt. And because nobody, you know, you have to be able to outwardly express the fact that Willow is the geeky one who is super awkward and can't talk to boys and all of that. She dresses like
Little House on the
Prairie. Your grandma's basically. Thrift store closet and Little House on the Prairie threw up on her. So she wears the thickest opaque tights and, you know, overall shorts and sweaters that look like your grandma made them, like knitted them by hand with and then added pom-poms and shit to them. Yeah, they have, like, you know, embroidered daisies and, like,
absolutely.
And, you know, they're fuzzy and all of that. And she always wears, if she's wearing a choker, it's made of daisies.
Which hilariously and, you know, now is kind of like, was that was in for a while. The, like, chunky,
it was.
Fluffy,
the
ugly sweaters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was later, not when Willow was wearing them.
No, it was
and
later.
And then, of course, because Darla the vampire at the beginning is, you know, a seductress and, like, bad. She, of course, is wearing the naughty schoolgirl outfit that we see at the very naughty beginning of the episode, which is so
it's pretty dramatic. So, yeah, even though Buffy actually turns out to be a super badass feminist show with lots of amazing themes, we definitely also still have
rocky start.
Rocky start. A little bit of a rocky start. But it smooths out after a while. So why does Buffy go to the library? She goes to the library where Giles lives. Giles, the new watcher. The illustrious and extremely hot. Yeah. Anthony Stewart Head, who was formerly of the Folgers commercials.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Where he played the sexy guy who came over to the lady's apartment with Folgers.
And who's going to say no to sexy guy with coffee?
Nope.
Not me.
No one. Not I. Sexy British guy, too. Super hot.
But,
So Giles is, as it turns out, Buffy's new watcher. But before we can get into the whole Buffy is a vampire slayer thing, Buffy goes to the library looking for, like, a history textbook or something. And Giles is like, I know what you're looking for. And he pulls out a big, fat, ancient book that says vampire with the spelling of it, vampire with a Y. So, like, the vampire. That's how I always see it. Vampire. So, and Buffy is decidedly, no, that is not what I'm looking for. Because, again, she's trying not to get kicked out of school and burn down any school gymnasiums. So, Buffy is well on her way to making friends, goes and sits with Willow at lunch, even though Willow's like, you can't legally be friends with me and Cordelia. But Buffy's like, oh, yeah, Cordelia's super nice to me, but subtext, she's kind of a bitch to everybody else. So, please hang out with me and be my friend. You are obviously nicer. Xander and Jesse, who's not long for this, these two first episodes, but he is part of the original Scooby gang, the short-lived.
Spoiler.
Damn. And we meet him and they are having lunch and Cordelia comes out, right? Because what happens? We have found a dead guy in a locker. So
no, I'm sorry. We found an extremely dead guy in the locker.
Extremely dead guy in a locker. He was in Aura's locker, right? One of the Cordettes.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So the guy who was killed at the beginning comes back
CSI
by
New York?
Literally, yes, falling out of somebody's locker onto them when they are trying to change for gym class, which is
yeah. For some reason, scene. He was stuffed in a locker in the girls' locker room.
Right.
Okay.
And so when she opens it up, he just, you know, falls in out. Classic movie ways, just literally falls out onto her. And it makes me laugh every it's single fucking
good.
Time.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So Cordelia comes to tell everybody that there was an extreme dead guy in the locker room. And so gym class was canceled. And immediately Buffy is like, uh-oh. So she asks what turn out to be the weirdest questions on the planet for any teenager. Did he have any marks? Like, how did he die? Cordelia naturally thinks this is really weird and is like, yeah, we don't know. So Buffy goes to investigate, and lo and behold, it turns out he has in fact been bitten by a vampire. So she goes to tell Giles, and she's like, hey, guess what? The dead guy was bitten by a vampire. And so they have that chat in the library. And we get a little background on the Slayer's history. And that Sunnydale is, in fact, I think Giles absolutely butchers Spanish and calls it the Boca del Inferno or something, and he's like, which means the hell mouth, but he says it in the worst possible Spanish you could muster, about how I just sounded now, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffy's like, well, crap, I guess I have to be a Slayer again. And unfortunately for Giles, and unbeknownst to Giles and Buffy, Xander is in the back of the library and overhears this conversation and is like, come again? A what now?
Yep.
Yeah. So we have a few scenes of underground with the master. And then we have Buffy getting ready to go to the Bronze for the first time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The Bronze, the weirdest fucking place for 16-year-olds to hang out.
So weird.
Because I don't know where all of you hung out when you were 16, but it definitely wasn't the local bar / club / pool bar. Like, you
yeah,
know,
it's
bar
definitely
where
a weird place to club, hang out.
Yeah, where bands also performed. Because this is also the same place that they can go and, like, drink beer later. So, I don't... Yeah, it's very odd.
The Bronze,
like, I get that they have
not a place that exists in real life.
No. And it's cool that, you know, parents are fine with their 16-year-olds going to this place. It's obviously also a place where adults go to drink because they have a bar.
Yep.
But, you know, cool. It's going to be our place when we have any kind of event that needs to have massive populations or musical interludes or scenes where we can all be curled up on a sofa, we are going to end up at the Bronze.
Yep.
Because, you know, it's a thing. Yeah.
The Bronze,
and this is also where we're,
is yeah. The Bronze is the Buffy the Vampire Slayer version of Central Park from Friends, right? But it makes even yeah. less sense than adults with jobs hanging out in a coffee shop all day. Because it's 16-year-olds on school nights hanging out at what is essentially a bar and lounge where live bands play.
Yeah.
Sure. But whatever. We're just going to, it's, you know, okay, maybe that's how they
we're
do
gonna
it.
We're going to go with it.
As I live in a small town now, I'm not going to lie, like, there's definitely opportunities for young people to hang out in places that we did not necessarily have growing up in a bigger city. But it's still, like, mostly if teenagers want to go out and drink, they just, like, go out and sit in the back of somebody's truck in a field, because that's what they actually do in small towns. But that's besides the point.
Yeah, and remember, this town is big enough to, as we find out in season 4, have a fucking college. So it's not like Sunnydale is like the smallest of towns.
Right. It's a college. Right?
It's not like,
as it turns
out. It's not like your town. Yeah. So the Bronze is where the college kids can go and fucking drink.
Right.
But it's cool that we're going to have our 16-year. Yeah. Fun. Anyway, we digress. On our way to the Bronze, we come across Sarah's, the man of Sarah's dream, the mysterious stranger.
Oh, he's so beautiful. David Boreanaz is so beautiful. He's so beautiful. You know what my note is for him? For Cordelia, it's popular, bitch. My note for Angel is hot. That's it.
I was saying, I thought you were going to go with yum, but okay, hot.
He's so hot. I don't know. Like, look, I'm not going to lie. I was, you and I both were raised in the 90s, but you were a little more savvy than me, I guess. I don't know what it was, but I just really went for the, like, guy who, as it turns out now, was maybe kind of rapey and stalkery in a way that was not
super
cool.
Stalkery.
I know.
Yeah, okay. Well, remember,
it's the Edward Cullen syndrome, which is even
that
creepier.
Dude should have been in prison. Yeah, he's so
gross. No, it's not okay. Although, well, I mean, yeah.
No, you sit outside a girl's window and stare in at her all night.
No.
You're super creepy, and it's
creepy.
Not okay.
It's even creepier also, to go into her bedroom while she sleeps.
Yeah.
And just watch
also,
her.
Dude, you're over 100, and it's weird.
Yeah.
Just saying.
She's very weird.
No. See, the difference is that you like that whole, like, I can fix him guy, and they're, like, you know, romantic, I'm going to stare at you from across the way without talking to you guy.
I'm over that now. I've aged into wisdom.
Well, you know, teenage you, Sarah, was all about
teenage
that. Teenage me, Sarah. Yeah, teenage me, Sarah, was like, all men are fucking awful, and love is bullshit, and my ideal man at the time was Rob Zombie. I was a member of the Giles is real cool, and when I'm grown up, I'm gonna move to England and find a guy like that club. And Angel's kind of creepy and needs to, like, you know, handle his business.
Oh, I would handle his business. Anyway,
yes, all I know about him right now is that he's a mysterious stranger who gives Buffy a warning.
He does.
Cryptic fucking warning that the harvest is coming.
And a cross necklace.
Right, because that's all you want is some weird guy in an alley to be like, hey, babe, the harvest is coming. Here's a necklace.
Yep.
And then disappear.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. And Buffy's not really down for it. She definitely is like, you're weird and creepy, and why are you following me in the alley? But he does
100% takes that necklace and puts it on.
She does take the necklace, and she does heed the warning, because he does seem to know about her and her slayerness.
Right, which is why she assumes later that he must be friends with Giles.
Right. So,
because, you know, weird dude.
Buffy makes it to the Bronze, and we have a Bronzy night where all the characters, more character development, right? Cordelia is just so shallow in the beginning. I forgot how shallow she was. And then I rewatched it. She
in
is
the beginning?
Like, it's bad. She gets less shallow over time. Like, she has a good character arc, like we said. But, oh, God. She is just the worst. Ugh, it's gross. And Willow's at the Bronze. And
dude, everybody's at the Bronze. Jesse's at the Bronze.
Giles is at Xander's the Bronze.
Of course, because again, everybody goes to the Bronze. Mm-hmm. And this is also where we have my first favorite quote from Buffy, when Willow is, you know, all about how she can't talk to boys, and, you know, she wants to talk to boys, but when she opens her mouth, like, nothing happens. And then Buffy tells her to carpe the diem.
Yeah.
You know?
Because tomorrow you might be dead.
And, well, when they try to translate it, they say, was it seize the fish?
Seize the fish? I don't know.
Carp. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Something about carp. Yeah.
Carp, yeah. and then she Giles tries to give her sweet washer lessons because that's what you do in the middle of a crowded nightclub. Yeah.
He tells her she mm-hmm. needs to hone her Slayer's spidey senses and be able to pick out vampires, which she is, in fairness, able to do, but because she does spot a vampire in the bronze, but it's because his fashion sense. I think she says something later to him like, "You look like DeBarge."
Yes, she does indeed say you look like DeBarge.
Which I didn't get when I was 16, but you know.
It's funny now.
It's funny now.
It's also really funny now because what is it, that one season of like last season of RuPaul's Drag Race where they keep like mentioning that the one queen like looks like DeBarge all the time, and I don't even think they know who that is. And so they're just like, okay.
Oh my god, but, that's funny.
Fine.
Yeah. So Buffy, oh yeah, she points out the vampire, and Giles is like, "You need, yeah, but you're supposed to use your senses or whatever." And then, as it turns out, the vampire meets some young victim, and it's Willow. Willow decides right. to seize the day, and she tragically picks the vampire in the room. So yes. they leave.
And Jesse is also seizing the day with a hot blonde in a schoolgirl uniform mm-hmm. who turns out to be Darla.
So yeah, Buffy goes after Willow to save her, and Xander follows her out, and Buffy's like freaking out about where's Willow. And Xander says something like, "I hope she didn't leave with a vampire because you might have to slay him." And Buffy says, "Was there a school bulletin? Is there anyone in this town who doesn't know I'm the Slayer?" And Xander like doesn't really believe her at first, but then her panic comes through, and they go off to the graveyard for the first of many scenes in the graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And follow the creepy guy, takes Willow into a mausoleum, tries to bite her, the whole shebang. He's like creepy and rapey.
Yeah, and they also encounter Darla and Jesse,
yes.
who did get bitten by Darla because, you know, she's impatient.
Yes, she got hungry and needed a snack.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to drag Darla and other vamp are going to take Willow and Jesse down into the sewers or into the underground where the master is. And what happens? Oh, and then Buffy shows up. And Buffy shows up to save them. Right. Buffy and Xander.
But just as she's trying to save them, of course, the master's henchman, Luke, shows up.
Ah, yes, Luke. He has a bigger role in mm-hmm. the next episode, but he's a very large, very also Cro-Magnon forehead vampire. And while Buffy is able to stake the one vamp DeBarge, the one vamp DeBarge, she is not able, and Darla runs off, right? I think. Mm-hmm. And Buffy starts fighting Luke, who is big and strong and kind of preachy because he's got this weird like scripture thing because the harvest is coming, which we will talk about next episode. And because next episode is called The Harvest. And the final scene is Luke throwing Buffy into a giant tomb thing with the bones, everything. And then leaps on top of her and is about to bite her while she perfects a lot of her like screechy, squealy, like, "Oh no, I'm getting beat up by a vampire" sounds, which are very different from Buffy's like "I'm kicking a vampire's ass" sounds. Sarah Michelle Gellar has a lot of sounds over the seven seasons that are meant to elicit like exactly who's winning the fight at what moment in time. And now she is making the and she is making the like more like oof sounds of I'm about to get bitten and getting kicked 7 ways from Sunday.
That's right. And then it fades to black, and to find out what happens, we have to tune in to episode 2, which is the second half of the very long premiere of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, mm-hmm. which is The Harvest.
Yes.
Which we'll talk about in a second after we take a quick break.
Absolutely.
All right. So Buffy is stuck in a stone coffin. Luke is hovering over her, and we're back for The Harvest.
Absolutely. The Harvest is like a weird episode for me, honestly, because there's so much of it that's like exposition. It's necessary, but watching it back now after, you know everything, I'm just like, there is so much vampire eating in this episode. Yeah. It's like an episode of Animal Planet. But yeah, so we open up on Luke about to bite Buffy, but fortunately, because Angel is hot and gave her a cross, Luke burns his hand on the cross as it falls out from like Buffy's shirt on her neck and jumps back, and that gives Buffy time to kick him out of the grave and get away.
Right, because when a mysterious weird guy gives you jewelry in an alley, you totally put it on.
Yes, right away. Right. Well, especially if it's a cross and you fight vampires.
I guess that's true.
Right.
All right. Points in your favor.
Right, exactly. So Buffy runs into the graveyard and is like looking for Willow and Xander and Jesse. Jesse, who's like bleeding out from his neck. Xander, who got like hit in the head. And Willow, who's just like, what the fuck? We need to get out of here. And Buffy saves them from more vampires that come to try to eat them. Xander almost gets grabbed. Willow gets grabbed, but Buffy saves Xander and Willow. Unfortunately, Jesse does get dragged away. And it's not going to end well for him. Spoiler alert. We lose our first member of the Scooby Gang.
Right, because while they were distracted, he got dragged away. Mm-hmm. So sad.
Well, although they don't kill him right away, right? Do they?
I don't know. Remember, no, the reason that Darla and DeBarge were out and, picking up victims, they need to bring back people for the harvest, for the master.
He needs
snack to snack.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. And when Darla goes back down with Luke, they tell the master all about the annoying little blonde that fought them, and they realize, oh snap, there's a new slayer in town.
There is a new slayer in town. Absolutely. And, so because the master, who's like very, I don't even know how to describe him. He's got like that sort of like, he's a little like swishy, you know what I mean? Like he's like sort of like has that like a weird sexual vibe, and it's like a little gay and a little like, I guess he's supposed to be, he seems like a little like, I don't know. He's very dramatic, and he does like a lot of gaslighting of his vampire minions, and he like guilts them a lot and like treats them like he's very put upon by all of this. It's it's very like Bette Midler meets like, I don't even know how to describe it.
Well, the dude has been trapped in a church that got crumbled in an earthquake. Yeah. For how many years, so you gotta do what you gotta do to make your life more appealing.
He's bored just like really fuck. He's got a weird vibe, the master.
Yeah, he does have a real weird vibe.
And not like he's a vampire, weird vibe. And we meet a lot of, you know, monsters and big bads in, like, coming seasons, right? But the Master, to me, was always kind of, like, a just a weird, like, he just has a weird vibe, and I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, you get feeling like he was a weird human, he was a weird vampire before he got trapped under Sunnydale, and he's a weird... Yeah, you're not sad when, you know, he succumbs to his fate at the end.
Yeah. But they do plan to use Jesse as bait. And back in the library, in the next scene, Buffy, Xander, Willow, and Giles are discussing options because Buffy is still going to try to save Jesse. And they are trying to figure out how to get to the vamp's lair. And Buffy kind of figures that the sewer systems is how the vampire, she tells them the sewer systems is how they get around town. And we need to find the vampire lair. And Giles is like, oh, well, I guess we can appeal to the city and see if we can get a map of the sewer system. And we come to find out that there's an easier way to get a map of the sewer system. Because Willow is a hacker.
That's right. Fluffy, fluffy sweater Willow is secretly a techno geek and master computer hacker underneath all of those fluffy sweaters and
she is
overalls. And over the course of this series is going to prove to be super capable in doing all sorts of really illegal shit that gets them information because she's going to hack into police records. She's going to hack into city records. She's going to hack into all kinds of shit to get information.
She hacks into city hall. Can hack into anything because, which was a very cool thing to see in the 1990s on television.
Right, because all like computer geeks and hackers were all dudes, and this is one of the first times that your badass computer person was a chick.
Yeah, Willow's very good with the books and very good with the computers and very good with lots of things. She's super smart.
Yeah, and that was our
again. Sorry, this one is of our the first reasons I love her.
Scooby Gang. Yeah, this is our first actual like Scooby Gang to get coming together to work up a plan to defeat the bad guy moment.
Mm-hmm. Xander contributes very little.
As is normal.
As we will come to see over the course of the series, he contributes more towards the end, I guess. But,
yeah,
you know, he contributes, like, heart or whatever. and contributes sarcasm and a few creepy incel vibes. But, yeah, I love that Willow just decides. So she's like, what does she say when I accidentally unlocked City Hall's records? And Giles is like, what are you talking about? And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so they hack into the sewer system, right? Or the sewer map, the city plans.
Yeah.
And Buffy decides she's going to... And okay, and this is when I actually wrote a note because when I was watching this episode again to like brush up, I was like, Xander is a whiny bitch in this episode. And I cannot deal. Like, I got actually mad because he gets super butthurt when Buffy's like, oh, okay, I figured out. Because Buffy figures out that the access to the sewers is like in the mausoleum where they were in the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, okay, I'm going to go down and save Jesse. And Xander's like, I'm going to come with you. And Buffy's very reasonably like, no, you're A, not a vampire slayer. B, this is extremely dangerous. C, it's the middle of the school day. Like, right? And Xander is like, but I want to help. And Jesse's my bud. He uses that phrase often. And Buffy's like, right. But again, it's deeply dangerous. And you are not a vampire slayer. And fucking Xander is like, fine, I'm weak, I'm nothing, I'm less than a man. And I'm like, I was so livid at that statement. When he said I'm less than a man, I was like, literally no one said that. What she said was, yeah, you're not a vampire slayer, right? A right? very specific, singularly chosen job for only women since the dawn of time.
Mm-hmm.
But cool. Yeah. Okay. Whine like a little bit. I was so mad. I was like, ugh. And then I realized that maybe Xander was not as cute as I always thought he was.
Right. Yeah, he whines about that a lot as we go through the season.
Yeah.
Why can't I do it? Fuck, because you weren't trained for this shit, yeah, bitch. It's not your destiny.
No, it's not your destiny at all. And yet, he continues to show up, even though most of the time he just gets in the way.
Right? Just fucking bring snacks and sit back. Like, yeah. It's not...
Like... Yeah. Like wear crosses, like wear several necklaces of crosses, right? So whenever you bring the snacks, right? Sure, carry a steak, but like you're definitely not helping at mm-hmm. all in yeah. any way. And in
be
fact,
the
you're
getaway driver.
Gonna get killed.
That's your job.
He's the Zeppo.
Yeah, which is why in that episode he is the getaway driver. Like that's basically his job.
But yeah. So I was just, I got so mad. As soon as he said, I'm less than a man, I was like, oh my God, this is incel bullshit. What is this? Mm-hmm. But yeah. So again, right, I think maybe Joss was having a moment where he, like, I think Joss used Xander to get out all of his, like, self-hatred shit. Yeah. His, like, insecure self-hatred shit. Right? I think he tried. I mean, you know, like, you... Again, I have a small amount of sympathy because Joss, like, did create the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. But still, it was the other writers, too. Marty Noxon, oh, let's just take a minute to acknowledge the awesomeness that is Marty Noxon. She is a goddess divine and a brilliant writer and producer.
And she also sings in the Once More With Feeling episode.
True. Shout but out. We have got six more seasons to go before that shit. Five okay, more seasons. Yeah. Six. Yeah. One okay. of the best episodes of television ever. But yes.
But let's finish this one.
Yes, let's finish this one. Time. We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
So yeah, Buffy's like, okay, I'm gonna go to the sewers, and what immediately happens is that she gets caught by the principal.
Of course.
And he's like, are you leaving school on the second day after I told you, like, not to get kicked out of school and, like, do shit? And so Buffy comes up with the best excuse ever, which is that Mr. Giles... Oh, no. First, she was admiring the fine fence work of the mm-hmm. school's fence.
Of course. Because that's what you do when you're 16.
Right. 100%. And then Principal Flutie says, you know, like... Do we need to call your mom? Like, basically says the principal shit. Like, I feel like you're trying to leave campus. And then Buffy realizes she can use Mr. Giles as a cover and says, Mr. Giles needs me to go buy a book for the library, because that happens. And even Principal Flutie doesn't fall for that. He's like, maybe that's how they do things in England, but here in America, we don't leave campus in the middle of the day. Which is actually... I mean, fairly true. It's not true here either. It's a free-for-all here. But in LA, for sure, they would not. And probably Sunnydale. California schools, I feel like, are a little stricter than what we've got going on here, which is basically just a farm. But that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So he locks the gate. Buffy jumps over the gate after he leaves and continues to take off to the underground. Which leads us back to the mausoleum, where Buffy runs into Angel again.
Okay.
Oh, he's so hot. I just can't. Like, he's so, like, he's just, oh. So Angel's like, anyway. So, like, Angel and Buffy talk again. He's very mysterious. Oh, she actually learns his name as Angel in this scene. And... you know, she's like, what's your name if you're going to keep popping up in my life? And he's like, Angel. She's like, oh, that's a pretty name. And that, I think, is the moment where she falls in love with him. But that may be up for debate. I don't know. And he doesn't go down in the sewers with her because he's a big chicken shit. And he even tells her he's afraid and they don't like him. And so he doesn't go down there. And so Buffy goes down into the sewers and is searching for the vampires when who shows up? But Xander.
Of course.
Because Xander decided that he was gonna follow her anyway. Because Xander, as it turns out, doesn't really get the concept of no meaning no.
Yeah. And he's going to be so, so helpful as we go down into the tunnels to try to rescue Jesse.
Yeah, he's definitely not. Well, I mean, he does help her shut the door.
Mm-hmm. There you go. He, super helpful.
He brought a flashlight. Not helpful, actually. and so Buffy starts to regale him of tales of her Slayer days back in L.A. She goes over all of the things that can kill a vampire. Beheading, fire, daylight, stake through the heart. Am I missing anything? Holy water. That doesn't really kill the vampire. Just kind of burns.
Hurts them a lot.
Unless they drink it. Foreshadowing. Never mind. but yeah, so they go down, run into an unconscious, or what they think is an unconscious Jesse. And they're trying to get through the sewers. Meanwhile, we have a cut to Cordelia, Harmony, and Willow in computer science, which is leads to one of my favorite Willow moments. Absolutely. So Cordelia is going on about how Buffy acted like a psycho at the Bronze the night before while she was looking for Willow and trying to save her from a vampire. And so Cordelia starts saying a bunch of tells the very exaggerated version of what happened at the Bronze, like, and says like Buffy was like screaming and saying like, I'm going to kill you, and all kinds of nonsense. And Harmony, while the two of them are working on a like computer programming software assignment, and Cordelia and Harmony are like gossiping and of course not doing their work because computer science is for nerds and only nerds, and they are clearly not nerds but the popular girls. And Willow stands up for Buffy when Cordelia calls her a psycho, and Cordelia's like, ugh, go away, who gave you permission to exist? So, you know, Willow quietly goes back to her work while Cordelia continues to spout some shallow bullshit nonsense about why she's this, that, or the other thing. And then she and Harmony finally finish their entire assignment. And Cordelia says, oh, thank God, the torture's finally over. This is the worst assignment ever. Everything's awful. How do we save it so we can be done? And Willow turns to them. And because Cordelia's like, oh, what do we push to save it? And Willow says, you push deliver. And Cordelia finds the DEL key and deletes all the work. And that is our first little snippet into what Willow is capable of when it comes to being a clever little bitch. I love that scene.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Uh-huh.
And this scene is also, if you didn't know that this show started in the mid late 90s, this scene totally sets the tone because this computer lab is so late 90s.
Oh, it's so wonderful. The big box monitors, the beige ones.
Yeah.
Everything is in DOS.
Chunky keyboard.
So amazing. Well, that's what they're all doing. Of course, when we go over to Willow's computer, she's like actively searching the internet, even though Google doesn't exist yet.
Hey, in 1997, you could totally ask Jeeves.
Oh,
or use AOL search. Thank you.
You could use AOL search. Ask
because
Jeeves.
Not for nothing, but I was the moderator for at least one Buffy forum on the internet in the late 1990s when this show came out. Yeah. And the co-founder of a Buffy online fan club. So the internet and search was a giant thing.
I mean, yes, it was. That's fair. We didn't do that in our computer lab. I don't know. I can't even remember life before smartphones. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, well, I'm like 100, so it's totally fine.
I remember snippets here and there, but beyond that, like, yeah. We did not, I'm trying to think of what, like, did we even have, I had a PC. We had AOL. We had dial-up.
Yeah, you got those sweet discs, the, like, CDs that you could use for coasters.
Oh, right, CD-ROMs. Mm-hmm. Oh, the era of the CD-ROM. Can you even? Right. Yeah. So, what else happens? I can't remember.
Well, we go back and find out that, of course, Jesse was a trap. Buffy and Xander have to work their way out.
Oh, yeah. So Buffy and Xander are, like, running through the sewers with Jesse. Jesse's freaking out. The vampires are chasing them. And then they get trapped in a corner. Jesse's like, out this way. And then his vampire face turns on. And we realize that Jesse's been vamped. So sad. Mm-hmm. And so they kick Jesse out. Like, Buffy throws him out of the room. They get out. And manage to – he pulls her out of the sewer. Xander pulls Buffy out of the sewer. And they just escape the vampires. Like, just. But, yes, we realize we've lost Jesse. Which is very sad.
I mean, yeah, but
I mean, look, Eric Balfour, Jesse's played by Eric Balfour, who in the 1990s sort of notoriously played characters that died
all the time.
Yeah, like he's just like the guy who's a kind of fuck up or like unpopular, and then he dies. Like that was basically Eric Balfour's entire for acting resume from like the years 1995 to 2000.
Yeah. But at this point, rest in peace, Jesse. We barely knew you. So sad.
Yeah.
Don't let the desk, you know, blow up in your eyes as you go up into, because of course we find out that not only do vamps get gross vampy face, when they vamp out, they also poof into deuced when they are staked and turned into dust in the wind, which is, you know, amusing in some instances because some of them just like dust and then some of them dust really slow depending on the episode and the dramatic effect it needs to have.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy.
Sometimes they dust like instantly. And then sometimes they have like one more good line before they dust or as they are dusting.
Yeah. And some of them like fall like real slowly. And some of them are just like, yeah, it's like, poof, and they're gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after Jesse, we have the longest chunk of exposition where we get to find out all about the motherfucking harvest.
Oh my God. It's so long.
It is. So blah, 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 bitty, blah. The master tried to open up the Hellmouth. He failed. There was an earthquake. He got trapped underneath.
And that's why
But now, 60 years later, this is a once in a century like time where he can anoint a appointed one who will go out and feed and basically use all of the blood that he drinks to feed and put energy into the master so that he can break through the barrier that he's trapped behind, come back to the surface, and then try once again to open the Hellmouth that he failed to open 60 years ago. And of course, the barrier he's stuck behind is demonstrated by some sweet late 90s CG he keeps trying to touch CG. It. And it looks like, you know, like when you touch Jell-O, when it's like hardened and it does that ripple thing.
It's that force field, like bloopy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's real rad.
They do it a lot. They had that a lot. They had that in like Charmed. And
it was in everything. It was like stock CG. Yeah, they stock just like CGI. Put into everything.
This is what a force field looks like. Clear Jell-O that you can only see when you touch it.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So our next scene is they're back at the library. Oh no.
Yeah. No, that's all the extra student. They discover that it's happening like the next night or like that night. So they need to, get it. And then they realize that the best place to have a bunch of people to gather as victims is, of course, our favorite meeting place.
The Bronze. Yes. So
they need to go.
They're definitely
going to
have a harvest at a nightclub.
Yeah. So they need to go get some supplies and get to the Bronze so they can stalk Luke and the harvest.
Yeah. So Buffy stops at home, right? Like the next scene is Buffy at home. And then Joyce, who is such a great mom, but at first Joyce is just the annoying parent trope of like, I don't get my teenager. I don't understand what my kid is going through. The complete Will Smith parents just don't understand. Joyce is just, like trying to do her best, whatever, but is completely clueless to Buffy's slayerness. Right. And when Buffy goes home to get supplies, Joyce comes in and is basically like, you're going out again? I don't think so. Your principal called. You were skipping school. You're grounded.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And really, so much drama in this show would have been avoided if Buffy had told her mom that she was the Slayer and the Chosen One. But in the interest of conflict and drama in the TV show, obviously, the fact that her mom doesn't leads to lots of drama and storylines and things. But then also the fact that she has to, circumvent her mom and, hide who she is and all of that, shows that, when you're trying to, be who you are and do what you need to do, that you need to go against the expectations of who you're supposed to be and what people are trying to make you into, and that you have to just do what you're going to do anyway to be your authentic self.
Yeah. That kind of shit. Joyce was such a great character. And she does serve that important purpose of being the at the beginning, of course, because, the first season of Buffy is so much about, developing the story. But Joyce is that I don't even know. I forgot. I lost my train of thought. That was stupid. But Joyce is she's such a good TV mom, right? She's really cares about her daughter, even though they have this conflict and Buffy can't tell her. It also, as I was watching this episode, I was it really doesn't make a lot of sense that Buffy, has kept the secret from her mom for so long, but in the first episode, five people find out Buffy's a Slayer, and it's totally cool. Think about the friends you had in high school, and, the people you became, really close with very quickly, and, they don't usually end up being the people that are your long-term friends, so it's sort of weird that they all know this, pretty critical secret about her within 5 minutes of meeting her.
Right.
But again, all for the sake of 90s storytelling. So of course Buffy defies her mother, goes into her hope chest, which on the top is full of cutesy things like scarves and scrunchies and whatever the shit teenage girls had in 1997. And then she takes out the top, and underneath is a bunch of weapons: stakes, holy water, cloves of garlic. Buffy's weapons also evolve over the seasons, because she opens that trunk and I was like, she has 3 steaks in there, some garlic, a couple bottles of holy water, a Bible. But there's really only 3 steaks. And maybe I think she gets a knife or a really pointy steak.
Yeah. Later on, it's battle axes and a fucking
Iron Maiden. This is all of it.
Yeah, this early chest is definitely leaves something to be desired.
Yeah.
But that's cool. She shoves all of it into a duffel bag because 3 steaks and some garlic fits in a duffel.
Yep.
And they head out to the Bronze. Where, of course,
save everyone.
Luke and his little vampire minions are trying to make snacky snacks of everybody and their brother.
And set the master free.
That's right.
So, Sorry, I had to put like food in my mouth for a second because I was starving and about to pass out and I wasn't going to be able to finish this episode. So I apologize for my chewing, but it's just the way it goes. I'm sorry. Sorry. So anyway, but also I made a note that Cordelia is so gross and shallow in this scene. Like, they really, really, really played into, like, every single trope of the most shallow human being. She has a line.
Oh.
One of her lines of dialogue is literally, she's going on and on about how she has to have the best and be the best and the highest quality of everything. And she'll never settle. And she says, like, when I go shopping, I have to have the most expensive thing. Not because it's expensive, but because it costs more. And I wanted to like peel her face off.
Yeah. Well, and don't forget too, like, you know, 35 minutes ago, she was like going, ooh, you're disgusting to Xander and Jesse. And like, you know, in a minute from now, Jesse's going to show up all like vamp suave and she's going to be like, hey there now.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to like mac on him and he's going to try to like eat her face.
Yeah. He definitely like grabs her and pulls her on the dance floor and she's like, ew, no. And then he's like, shut up and like grabs her and she's like, oh, okay. I'm like, again,
mm-hmm. It's gross.
Mm-mm. We need to not perpetuate this whole rapists are sexy thing.
Right?
They're trying to kill you.
I just be like, no. Yeah, so everybody's fighting. Darla's fighting with Giles. Xander ends up confronting his ex-best friend, turned vampy vamp Jesse. Willow ends up saving Giles from Darla by pouring holy water on him, which is amazing.
Totally.
It makes me so happy. And of course, Buffy is going to face off against her aggressor from the beginning of the episode, Luke.
Yeah. Big.
Who spends half of his time in this episode, you know, preaching at the, you know, in the bronze, and then thankfully gets down to the fighting, which is much less.
Yeah. Than he goes on and on. And then they have a really long slow motion montage of him just biting people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of fighting.
Oh, it's, yeah. It drags out.
And then, as we didn't even mention, that Angel sits all of this shit out because
Angel's
he's scared.
Outside the Bronx.
Yeah, he wouldn't go down to the tunnels with Buffy because he's scared. He's not going to come into the Bronze because he's scared. He's just going to sit outside and let, seriously, Willow is doing fighting. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
Like, Angel's just like, to outside.
I'm scared. I don't think I can handle this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous, but
mm-hmm.
it's Buffy, which there is a realm of ridiculous in Buffy that is delightful and ridiculous. But yeah, so let's see. Oh, Xander does face off with Jesse. He can't stake him, right? But like he gets shoved up, like Jesse shoves him up against the wall, and then Jesse's like, ha ha, you can't stake me, as Xander holds up the stake. And then Jesse, some guy trying to escape, some rando, just like runs into him and like pushes Jesse into Xander and he gets staked in the heart and dusted.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious.
It was amazing.
Uh-huh. And then Buffy defeats Luke because while Luke is presumably like a 1,000-year-old vampire, I don't know if the master's like 2,000 or whatever, like Luke is this old ass vampire, but like doesn't have a good concept of how much time goes by, because Buffy defeats Luke by like they're fighting, they've been in the Bronze for like 30 minutes, it's just past sundown, and then Buffy's like, yeah, well, guess what? You forgot about this. And then throws a mic stand through a window and is like, sunrise. And a light shines in and Luke's like, oh, no. And then it's just a backstage light because it's still nighttime. And Buffy's like, oh, yeah, it's at about 9 hours. And I'm like, did Luke like not remember how daylight and nighttime work in his 1,000 years mm-hmm. of life? I guess he just got wrapped up in the moment. But yeah, so Buffy defeats Luke. saves everyone. Well, not everyone. Definitely a lot of people got eaten. And Xander is like, nothing's ever going to be the same. And then we cut to the next morning at school when everything is exactly the same. And everyone who was at the Bronze last night, which was, I guess, everyone in town, is like, but all the kids are like just rationalizing it. Like Cordelia, what did she say? Like it was rival gangs fighting over turf and like everybody.
PCP.
Yeah.
It's always PCP. It's always
PCP. It was a gang on PCP. But yeah, so, and like, no one, like Xander and Willow just can't believe it. They're like, what? How can everybody just be like rationalizing this? And Buffy's like, because people rationalize things that they don't understand and it's fine. So the Scooby Gang is wrapping up their first big vamp adventure. Giles, of course, warns them that this is just the first of many vamp adventures to come. And they're all just laughing and joking. And Buffy's like, oh, well, I could still get kicked out of school. And they're making jokes about, do we have to study for history if there's going to be the end of the world? And Giles utters the famous line as he walks away. Oh, the Earth is doomed. And we cut to the theme song again and credits roll. And the first double episode, episodes 1 and 2 of the iconic show Buffy the Vampire, comes to a close.
That's right. And then we're off because now we have all of our main characters in place. And we are ready to get down to the business of our weekly big bad.
Yep.
Minor bad, because before we get back to our season-long big bad, the master, who will make his reappearance later.
Yes. All right. So next week, we are going to cover episode The Witch. And next week, we will actually have some real-life ladies from history who maybe had to deal with some fucking patriarchy when they were just trying to get their witch on in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So check us out next time for that. Follow us on Instagram at She Saved the World a Lot Pod. And till then, go watch some more fucking
Absolutely.
Buffy.
Absolutely. Watch all the Buffy, especially in trying times. The world's a little crazy right now. It's getting calmer. I think a little bit. I think we might enter a sort of period of time where our country is not falling apart and thing like we're not just living in constant sort of like PTSD terror of like, what is the president tweeting today? That feels really good. So revel in that. But watch some Buffy.
There's never a bad time for extra Buffy.
There's never a bad time for extra Buffy. And if you want to send us any questions or suggestions for who some badass ladies in history that we should talk about in relation to an episode of Buffy, then shoot us an email at shesavedtheworldalotpodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Till next time.
Till next time. See you.